Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, I thought I'd share this a little different from talking about summer. Wasn't able to chat about this around Father's Day. Jim Higley is a national fatherhood advocate speaker, and he wrote a little essay in the Chicago Tribune I think I'd like to share with everyone. It's entitled, If This Dad Could Travel Back in Time. Author Jim Higley on what he would have done differently if father had a redo button. Jim writes, I was in the home stretch of a talk about parenting. It's a talk I've given many times. This time I was in front of a group of parents in a Buffalo Grove middle school gym. I invited them to join in the conversation. The first few questions focused on specific problems. A daughter who stopped communicating, a son with questionable friends, drinking, pretty common topics. Then came a question from a young dad in the back of the room. Would you do anything different as a dad now that you know what you know? His question caught me off guard. Perhaps it was hitting too close to home. I wish I had been more available to my children, I told him, not just physically available, but also emotionally available. Then I shifted my answer to new research supporting my response, safely deflecting my comments from anything personal. But his question lingered in my mind and heart as I drove home that night. Should've, would've, could've. Those are dangerous and highly uncomfortable words to use when reflecting on your parenting. I've been a dad for nearly 25 years, and I'd like to think I've earned a strong passing grade. I've raised three children. Two of them are college graduates and gainfully employed, happy. The youngest is about to start his collegiate journey. All good, right? But would I have done anything different? Pull up a chair, my friend. This may take a while. Some of the things, well, I wouldn't worry so much about fixing everything. Kids don't need us to solve every problem. Our heart and compassion are often enough. I'd let my kids pick out the paint color for their bedroom walls at least once. I'd be sure they knew how to play chess. I'd make it a priority to sit down at least once a year and organize all their photos and childhood memories. I wish I'd let my kids fail more often and give them the experience of solving their own problems at an early age. I'd make sure my children knew how to dance. A basic box step has value, and sweating to a polka is fun. I'd know our family tree better because just going back two generations isn't good enough. I'd ride more roller coasters with my kids, and I wouldn't make such a big deal about my own silly fears. I'd make it a point to smile every time I saw my children. Every time. Even when I was angry, frustrated, or tired. Time has taught me the power of something as simple as visibly showing my love. I'd surprise my kids more often with spontaneous water balloon fights. I'd start those talks about sex, drugs, and drinking a lot earlier in life. They really are a series of ongoing chats. I wish I volunteered more often with my kids, side by side. I'd make sure my kids were more knowledgeable about food and nutrition. And I wish I would have taught them that cooking means more than warming pizza up in the microwave. I wouldn't worry so much about living by every single rule ever written. Ice cream for breakfast occasionally isn't the worst thing in the world. I'd make sure they learn from me early on that I am not Superman. They need to know that I make mistakes and am vulnerable. Stepping back up to the plate after failing is what makes a man super. And like I told that young dad in the audience, I'd work at being more available to my children, physically and emotionally. I'd grab every moment that knocked on my door. I'd take them outside more. I'd go on more walks. I'd snuggle. I'd sit next to them on the couch just so they knew I was there. I'd make sure I was always open to their thoughts. I'd embrace their ever-changing ideas. I'd listen better. I'd show more approval more often. And I'd sure make sure that they never feel, through life's ups and downs, that the love of their dad needs a redo. Jim Higley, if this dad could travel back in time. Very touching thoughts, and I thought I'd share that with everyone, because as a dad, I think that we're guilty of a few of those things. So maybe since we've heard them out loud, we'll pay attention a little better. Well, do let me jump to a little summer essay also, written by the very talented Jack Spadafora from Park Ridge, entitled Summer, A Time to Leave Worries Behind. Jack writes, I remember a huckleberry friend of my youth once telling me, summer is what life ought to be. He was telling me this from atop a tree I couldn't quite climb with him. As a matter of fact, I couldn't quite do a lot of things starting every June, and so I used to have a tough time agreeing with his assessment of summer. Now, considerably older and a tad wiser, I've come to see it his way. Spring is rich with promise. Fall is glorious with color, and winter has the magic of its holy days and holidays. But summer, the earth bursts with life. The trees and gardens explode with aromas, and the planting fields groan heavy with the gifts of God. Waking up on a summer morning, seeing and smelling all this, it's hard not to feel just a bit eternal. Then going to sleep, listening and relishing the magic of crickets' choruses, singing to fat white moons, it's hard not to believe in forever. My friend of the treetops instinctively seems to have already understood all this. Back then, I seemed to have missed all this. I did it by focusing more on the pressures instead of the pleasures of summer. You know, guys are supposed to build Brad Pitt bodies, sprint down lakefront trails, excel at games, win girls' hearts during vacation romances. Oh, I still notice the lean and beautiful people out there, but I have come to realize that the good old summertime is far more than an agenda to be met. It is that lazy, hazy season each year during which you really don't have to try so hard. Winning races and romances are not a requirement, simply an invitation. If they end well, good. If they don't, summer always has another new day waiting for you. So whether you're pumping iron or watching your carbs, whether you're a wannabe idol or the next makeover, relax a little. Take a long, sweet look at our summer and let it make you feel good about who you are, just as you are. However, don't wait as long as I did to learn this. Because summer is that lazy, hazy season during which you really don't have to try that hard. Just enjoy it. And I hope everybody is enjoying it. I want to mention this for Kathy Taylor, Kathy Taylor PR. Co-founders John Stoops, Tim Evans, and Mark Grapey proudly announced the second season of Three Oaks Theater Festival, a summer theater festival that brings limited engagement runs of highly acclaimed professional productions to audiences in Harbor Country, Michigan. This expanded season is being performed in creative venues throughout Harbor Country, including the Acorn Theater, Vickers Theater, and the historic Lakeside Inn. Three Oaks Theater Festival is presented with major support by the Pokagon Fund. The 2014 Three Oaks Theater Festival will present the family-friendly Blair Thomas & Company's A Piano with Three Tales, Dennis Watkins' The Magic Parlor, a staged reading of Timeline Theater's The Normal Heart, David Lutkin in Woody Says, A Life in Music of Woody Guthrie, and Jackalope Theater's Exit Strategy, and Shaughnessy Theater's Company's Huey. Information and tickets are available at www.threeoaksfestival.com or call 866-811-4111. Last summer's inaugural season of the Three Oaks Theater Festival was an unequivocal success. This summer we are bringing even more production to unique venues throughout the area. We couldn't be more thrilled with this season. We can't wait to share it with visitors and residents of beautiful Harbor Country, says John Stoops, one of the co-founders. Again, for information, 866-811-4111. And also want to mention for Michelle Maliz, the Immerman Angels' fourth annual golf outing. Join Immerman Angels at their fourth annual golf outing on Thursday, July 17th at 12:30 at Harborsight International Golf Center, 110th and Doty by the lake. Immerman Angels continues to grow the world's largest database of mentor angels, volunteer cancer survivors, and caregivers trained to provide one-on-one support to anyone touched by cancer. Guests will enjoy an afternoon of golf, lunch, on-course games with great prizes, fabulous auction items, and fun with Immerman Angels. The evening will also commence with a special dinner reception with comedian Pat McGann serving as the honorary guest speaker. Immerman Angels carefully matches and individually pairs a person touched by cancer, a cancer fighter or survivor, with someone who has fought and survived the same type of cancer, a mentor angel. Cancer caregivers, spouses, parents, children, and other family and friends of fighters also receive one-on-one connections with other caregivers and survivors. These one-on-one relationships inspire hope and offer the chance to ask personal questions and receive support from someone who is uniquely familiar with the experience. The service is absolutely free and helps anyone touched by any type of cancer, at any cancer stage level, at any age, living anywhere in the world. Just a great group of people. Johnny Immerman, of course, started this. To learn more, visit ImmermanAngels.org or call 877-274-5529. We had the opportunity of having Johnny on the show many times, and certainly Michelle Moliz does a great job getting the word out. And again, that's July 17th at 12:30 at Harborsight International Golf Center, 110th at Doty. For information, 877-274-5529. Well, in honor of having our first very special guest on the show, I thought we'd play two of his biggest hits, some of my favorites, Good Lovin' and Groovin', and we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
One, two, three.
Good love. Good love. Good love. Good love.
I was feeling so bad. I asked my family doctor just what I had. I said, doctor,
doctor.
I can't imagine anything that's better.
crowded avenue. Do anything we like to do. There's always lots of things that we can see. We can be anywhere we like to be. All those happy people we could meet just moving on a Sunday afternoon. Really couldn't get away too soon. No, 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 no. Spending sunny days this way, we're gonna talk and laugh our time away. I feel it coming closer day by day. Life would be ecstasy, you and me endlessly moving on a Sunday afternoon. Really couldn't get away.
Good Lovin' and Groovin', two of the great hits by Felix Cavalieri's Rascals. No better way to introduce and begin our introduction of our very special guest. One of the fun things about hosting my radio show is having the opportunity of making the acquaintance of some very interesting, talented, and fascinating people. And our first very special guest is just such a person. He's a man who's spoken to us through his music for many years. We're all familiar with his songs because they've become standards that speak to each of us and just simply touch our hearts. Memorable songs like the ones we just heard, Good Lovin' and Groovin', number one gold record mega hits. And some of his other classics that defined a generation and continue to do so today, like Lonely Too Long, A Girl Like You, A Beautiful Morning, and what I and many other consider one of the most beautiful love songs in music, How Can I Be Sure? The message has always been to stand for peace, love, and happiness. For legendary singer-songwriter Felix Cavalieri, making people feel good is primary to his illustrious 50-year career that includes the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Songwriter Hall of Fame, Vocal Group Hall of Fame, and Grammy Hall of Fame. Few artists can claim they defined a generation. Felix Cavalieri, singer, songwriter, music producer, and gifted musician, continues to remind us to keep listening for the world's beauty. A man whose distinctive vocal and musical virtuosity not only sets the standard but defines the essence of excellence in music and song that spans generations. Now celebrating his 2014 tour, it's both a joy and an honor to welcome the iconic and award-winning performer, Mr. Felix Cavalieri. Felix, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Well, very well deserved. And I can always say I'm sorry we missed meeting each other personally when you were in town doing the tour for Once Upon a Dream here a few months ago in Chicago. It was a great show. We loved it.
Wow, thank you. Yeah, and we really enjoyed Chicago as well.
You know, I think what's remarkable, Felix, is when you sit down and listen to all the great hits Felix Cavalieri's Rascals have had over the last year, there's one after another, and they keep going.
Well, we were pretty fortunate in those days because the competition was pretty high, too. You know, so it was quite a coup to be able to punch through those charts there.
Well, now you're a New York guy. Went to Syracuse for a bit, and music was your life. Did you always want to play the piano? Did you learn as a youngster?
Exactly what happened. I mean, I started off very young playing classical piano. And I did that for about 8 years before I even heard of such a thing as rock and roll. You know? And then I started that, and you know, I just really enjoyed it all those years, and I still do.
Any of your songs, your favorites, or which ones kind of stand out amongst the others? Of course, Good Lovin' and Groovin' are, just as I said before in the introduction, mega hits. But you know, one of mine, as I said before, is How Can I Be Sure? What a beautiful love song that was.
Yeah, well, that does stand out as far as a musical venture. But, you know, the ones that really mean a lot to me, you know, that people got to be free really means a lot to me. And, you know, it's kind of like to say which one of your children is your favorite, you know.
You love them all, but some you like a little better than others.
Yes, some of them treat you a little better.
That's the truth. That's the truth. Now, you're a little far away from New York now, down in Nashville. That's a little different environment than growing up on the streets of New York.
Well, it is, but you see, Nashville, the reason that I'm here is because of, it's because of that songwriting community.
Okay.
That's the ticket down here. That's what brought me here. I came down here and I found a tremendous affinity for people who write. And lo and behold, that was 20 years ago, and I'm still here.
Really? You've been down there that long, huh?
Yeah, I was really kind of surprised to see what's going on down here musically.
But are you gravitating towards, and I hate to use the term in generalities, country music? I mean, but is that, what kind of music is it that you're pursuing now?
Well, you see, that's the nice thing about down here. There are, believe it or not, all types and all genres of music.
Mm-hmm.
And very much young people come here to get discovered, and very, you know, it's just amazing how many people down here dabble in songwriting, you know, regardless of what their other professions may be, which is not the case in a lot of other places. As a matter of fact, I don't know any other place that's really like this. It's a songwriting community.
So it's kind of like what New York used to be.
Well, there used to be a lot more places like this, you know. Just as you go to L.A. if you want to be in film or in acting,
yeah,
you come here because you want to be in songwriting, because it seems to be, I call it like a mecca, but basically it's a place that it welcomes the songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of unique, because in other places, that's not the case. They don't even really know, understand what a songwriter goes through and does, you know?
Well, basically, you're a poet of this day's society, and you talk about songwriting. Do you enjoy writing the song more than you do performing it?
Well, you know, there's a certain freedom about writing that you can't really describe, because, I mean, you know, there's really no limits to what comes out, you know, onto the, you know, these days, the computer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's no bars, you know, and basically what happens from then is where the limitations set in. So there's a kind of freedom in writing, you know.
I had the opportunity of having the great Johnny Mathis on the show around Christmas time. He had a contemporary Christmas hit for a guy his age, which was remarkable, because what a tender and beautiful guy he is. Is there any songs that you wrote or that you sung that you would say, well, I think I'd like to have this person sing that, or this person could sing that too? Are there any songs that other people have sung that you said, you know, I'd like to sing that song, I'd like to cover that song?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the second more than the first, yeah. There's a lot of great songs out there that you just really enjoy kind of like singing along with the radio, or singing along with, you know, like a movie or something like that. I mean, there's always songs out there. Like, for example, this new Pharrell Williams song, Happy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great song to sing.
Yeah.
You know, people love it. They love to hear it. And, you know, you love to sing it. I think that's a perfect example. As far as other people doing my songs, well, you know, it's turned into a business. So that kind of takes a lot of the fun out of that. You know, I'm sure you'd like to have someone that sells a ton of records, a ton of products, do your song. You know, from an aesthetic point of view, yeah, you know, you kind of aim at certain people, but it's a very, very difficult business to get someone to sing your song. You know,
mm-hmm. You know, you had mentioned earlier that your basic foundation is in classical piano, Felix. And then, of course, you took up the organ. Were you the first performer in rock music really to accentuate the organ in a rock group?
I'm not really sure of that. You know, I know there's been others, but ours was a dominant piece of that puzzle, you know, because the group was based around the fact that the organ was playing all those solo bass, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing the bass. We did not have a separate bass player. I don't know that many other groups have ever done that, you know. But there's been other groups with the Hammond, but I'm happy to say that the Hammond's organ people I just started a Hall of Fame, top 25, and well, you know, because you're based there, right?
Well, you know, it's great and very well deserved that you're in there.
But I'm really happy to be in there because with all those other accolades, that's a pretty cool one. Because the Hammond is still a pretty cool instrument.
When you were growing up, who were some of the people you looked up to? Did you emulate or look up to the Beatles, or was there other groups that you kind of said, you know, these are kind of cool, I'd like to try this guy out?
Well, I started a little earlier than that. You know, as I say, when I was about 13 or 14, I discovered and heard about rock and roll through Alan Freed, you know.
So I heard
I heard people, the first people that I heard was like were like Ray Charles and I'd say Jimmy Smith for organ, and I heard like Fats Domino and Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard as far as piano players and singers. You know, it was amazing, the talent that was around in those days. Just amazing. And that was the roots that I kind of came across.
And didn't I hear, I wonder if I heard you described, or the group described, as kind of a blue-eyed soul type of music, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've always found that interesting because, you know, it's the same thing as, you know, when I speak, I kind of carry an accent with me, you know?
Sure.
And that accent is just a natural thing. You don't really think about it. So when we were doing our songs and we were doing, you know, a lot of covers in those days, it turned out to be R&B, even though there was no, you know, real attempt to make that happen, you know. It's more or less just like a style.
But there's a certain amount of energy, Felix. You define music groups like the Beatles or the Beach Boys. They have a specific sound.
Right.
Felix Cavalieri's Rascal's Head, an energy, an enthusiasm that, you know, you just hear it and you perk up. You just perk up and you start listening.
That's great. That's exactly what we tried to project. That's exactly how, you know, I kind of live my life, you know. And, you know, and we did have a tremendous amount of energy in the original band, too, because everybody was, you know, and there's a big difference between groups that come from the East Coast and come from the West Coast. And one of those differences is, as you mentioned, is energy. And not necessarily positive energy, but energy, you know. And that's something that's inherent in the, I don't know if it's the water or whatever it is.
Well, I'm from the south side of Chicago, so we're full of the same piss and vinegar that people from New York were.
Absolutely.
And you just kind of capitalized on it, right?
Well, it just, yeah, it's part of your nature. But, you know, as I say, we really enjoy Chicago. We got there, and I think it was maybe like one day of rain, and it was very balmy for that time of year. It was great. We really enjoyed it.
Well, I remember the opening night, we just had a ball. I mean, we were standing up and grooving to the music. Grooving to grooving is what we were doing.
There you go.
Now, did you enjoy doing the tour a little bit on the Broadway side of things?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we had a good time doing that tour. It was the first time we had been together in many, many years. And, you know, I mean, the only thing was a little bit limiting for me in terms of I didn't have much leeway to stretch out and do anything besides what was exactly scripted.
Yeah.
And I found that a little difficult. But other than that, I mean, it was great singing with the guys and playing with the guys. And, you know, the show was well received. It was fun. It was very different for me, though. You know, I've never been that structured.
What do you see the difference? Now, you've, as I said in the introduction, have spanned generations. There's another generation listening to the Rascals' music and so forth, and Felix Cavalieri. Now, you have, our grandchildren are listening to your music.
I know. Pretty strange feeling, I'll tell you.
But a different type of people, different crowds, kids with smartphones and taking pictures and all that other stuff.
Well, you know, when I do a concert, you know, I always mention that when these young people come up, I say, you know, I love to play for people who weren't even born. It's pretty cool, actually. And you know, it just shows you the power of music to transcend, like, you know, age and language and, you know, a lot of people don't have a clue of what we're singing about. Well, I go to Japan, you know, and they just love it, you know, and it shows you that there's a real power in music.
Yeah, but Felix, your music is ageless and timeless as you are, and you still have the energy to do what you're doing. You still enjoy doing it. I think that's what keeps us all young.
I think so, too. You know, I think that if you're lucky enough to have this vehicle to express yourself in, that it really will keep you young, as I say, inside and outside.
Well, what's going on with the rest of the tour?
Well, the Once Upon a Dream tour is done, and so that that configuration of the original Rascals is finished for the time being. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I have a band called Felix Cavalieri's Rascals,
right,
that I've been doing for many, many years, And so I'm continuing on the road with that. And we're going to be doing a Christmas show this year.
Oh, great.
I'm going to be doing a Christmas album this year. And we're going to do certain parts of the show with Darlene Bluff, which I'm really excited about.
Oh, great.
Because, you know, she had that wonderful Christmas album with Phil Spector.
Right.
And I've never done this before. It's something new and exciting. And I'm going to really enjoy this because normally December is an off month.
Mm-hmm.
This time it'll be a work month. And, you know, it's going to be fun.
Please come to Chicago because we miss you here, my pal.
Well, I appreciate it. I would love to take this to Chicago. And I will tell the powers that be that, you know, we got an invite.
Well, you definitely have an invite, and if we can do anything to set something up or help something up and produce it, we certainly like to participate in that. My website is kevinmoorepresents.com, kevinmoorepresents.com, and Melissa has it. Melissa's done a great job putting us together, and I appreciate that. But we'd love to see you come to Chicago because, gosh, we could listen to your music all night, very frankly.
we had a ball there, as I say. You know, there are certain cities you go to that really stand out, and that was one of them.
Well, as I said, Felix, I'm half Irish and half Italian. My mother is Italian, and we got a lot of paisans here in Chicago. I'd love to take you out to dinner when you come back here and enjoy some of the Italian food we have in Chicago.
Yes, that sounds very, very good.
Well, we're going to take a little break here and play some more of your music, and we'll be back in just a moment with Felix Cavallari and the Rascals.
Secure. It's nothing like I ever thought it would be. Someone opened up a door for me. A girl like
I'm in love with.
Girl like you.
I'm in love with.
Must be you that caused this feeling in me. You that fills me confident. You that to figure out what to do, so I leave it to you. Only know that when you're away from me, nothing satisfies the need in me. For a girl like you, a girl like you, must be you that caused this feeling in me. You that fills me confidently. You that brings the best out in me. You. Nobody, nobody. Oh, yeah. Every time I'm holding you close to me, trouble's gone, it's gone. I'm in ecstasy with a girl like you. Girl like you. Someone love me. Girl like you. Someone to understand. Exactly like you.
It's a beautiful morning. I think I'll move outside for a while.
sunshine caresses each new waking hour. Seems to me that people keep seeing more and more each day.
Gotta say,
lead the way.
It's okay.
Well, they gotta say, it's okay.
All right.
Gotta say, lead the way.
More of the many great hits of Felix Cavalieri's Rascals, A Girl Like You, and It's a Beautiful Morning. It certainly is. And we're back on The Kevin Moore Show, talking with Mr. Felix Cavalieri. Well, Felix, as I said, it's been both a joy and an honor to spend some time chatting with you, and from myself and from all our listeners and from all your fans. You know, thanks very much for sharing your unique talents and gifts with all of us. I hope you have a great summer, and keep us tuned in. I'm going to make sure Melissa does that, because we'll have to talk before the, you know, the Christmas tour and the Christmas songs and so forth, because that'll be something to look forward to.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. It was great speaking to you, and I hope to see you in the near future and break some bread.
I look forward to that. Thanks, Felix.
Thank you.
The great Felix Cavalieri, the Rascals, some of the great music of the 60s and early 70s, Good Lovin', Lonely Too Long, Groovin', A Girl Like You, How Can I Be Sure, one of my favorite love songs. People Gotta Be Free, It's a Beautiful Morning. Just a terrific and very, very talented man, living out in Nashville right now and certainly doing wonderful things. But we're going to play a little more of his music, certainly something I very much look forward to, and enjoyed talking with him and making his acquaintance. Look forward to talking with him when he comes back for some tours in Chicago, hopefully. And as I said in the introduction, let's listen to one of the most delightful love songs in music, written by Felix Cavalieri, How Can I Be Sure? And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
How can I be sure, in a world that's constantly changing, how can I be sure where I stand with you? Whenever I am away from you, I wanna die, 'cause you know I wanna stay with you. How do I know? Maybe you're trying to use me, flying too high can confuse me. Touch me, but don't take me down. Whenever I'm away from you, my alibi is telling people I don't care for you. Maybe I'm just hanging around with my head upside down. It's a pity I can't seem to find someone who's as pretty and lovely as you. How can I be sure? I really, really, really wanna know. I really, really, really wanna know. Oh,
Delightful chatting with Felix Cavallari and the Rascals and listening to How Can I Be Sure? And we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. The Auditorium Theater hosts the 10th annual Hands Together Heart to Art Summer Day Camp. This unique program brings joy and hope to children who have lost one or both parents and utilizes the therapeutic power of the arts to encourage emotional healing. The Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University proudly hosts its 10th annual Hands Together Heart to Art Summer Day Camp for children who have experienced the death of one or both parents. The Auditorium Theater is partnering with high-quality teaching artists and professional grief counselors to produce a unique program that utilizes the arts and the therapeutic power of creative play to encourage emotional healing. This summer, two sessions will be offered, July 7th through the 18th and July 21st through August 1st. Employing several areas of the performing arts, such as acting, improvisation, singing, music, dance, juggling, mime, writing, and stage direction, Hands Together Heart to Art encourages communication, fosters emotional growth, and provides the consolation of friendship and compassion. Each camper participates in dance, theater, and music classes daily. There will also be rotating special guests at classes including jugglers, musicians, dancers, and more. Campers also have the time for journal writing and one-on-one meetings with a grief counselor. Hands Together Heart to Heart provides a place for children to address their emotional needs in a safe and supportive environment while building self-esteem, consciousness, and problem-solving skills. And on the line with us right now is the businessman, entrepreneur, musician, one of the leaders in the vibrant world of Chicago's theatrical community, and the executive director of the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, now presenting the 10th annual Hands Together Heart to Heart Summer Camp at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, July 7th through the 18th, July 21st through August 1st. Our good pal, Mr. Brett Battison. Brett, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you, Kevin. It's always a pleasure.
Can you believe this 10 years, buddy?
I know, and you've been in it since the beginning. You've been supporting it since the beginning. I think this is probably the 10th year I've gotten on your show and talked about
it. Well, and many, many more to come, and I'm honored to have been part of it and to see the success that you've brought to this program. And it was all your idea, and I think everything starts with an idea, but it's not how many good ideas you have, it's how many good ideas you make happen, and you really made this happen, Brett.
Well, I appreciate that, Kevin, but that's about all I can take the credit for is the idea. The camp has really evolved because of the people who have worked here and the campers that have come through here and all of the people that have come to support it. I think that, you know, we've listened to people, we've made it better each year because of what we've heard, and that's probably the key to the success. It's now everyone's idea, not just mine.
Do you have kids who were at the early stages of the camp coming back and acting as counselors now?
We do, actually. We have kids that were campers.
That's great.
One of them, believe it or not, one of them has been coming to camp for 9 of the 10 years, and this year he's a junior counselor.
God bless him. God bless him. Boy,
it's really terrific.
That's great. That shows you're doing something right, buddy boy.
Well, thank you. I got a nice letter today from a parent of a kid who was here about 6-7 years ago, and he came to camp for 3 years. But anyway, she wrote to tell me where he was going to college and to invite me to his going away party in August. And
wow.
I just thought that, you know, being able to stay in touch with those kids and to see them succeed is just means so much.
You know, it's a great program. Give us a little background. I know I did a little introduction, but tell us what happens during the camp.
Well, a typical camp day will include, as you said, classes in the three major performing arts that we feature, dance, music, and theater. Then it will also include, at the end of the day, what we call a specials time, when we bring in what could be puppeteers or jugglers or magicians, and they work with the kids for an hour at the end of the day. And then in between, we'll have adults come who lost a parent as a kid, and they will tell the campers their stories. And that gives the campers, you know, hope for the future, and they can see then that the future is still bright no matter how bleak it may look at the moment, and then they spend time with their healing counselors.
And the genealogy came from your own experiences.
It did, and that's what really makes it rewarding for myself. You know, my dad passed away from an unexpected heart attack when he was 30. I was 7 years old.
Jeez, that's young.
And it was very young. But it was my involvement in the theater that really gave me self-confidence and gave me the tools to express myself and let me be surrounded by friends who could support me. And so when I got older, I thought, you know, there's got to be a way I can do for other kids who have experienced the same loss what I had as a child, and that's what Hands Together Heart tries to do.
Do you have a lot of adults that are pounding on the door wanting to participate and share their stories with these young people?
Well, I wouldn't say pounding on the door might be a little bit of a stretch, but but you would be amazed. You would be absolutely amazed how many people lost a parent as a kid and how many people are willing to talk about it. There are, you know, we only have time for, eight speakers per year.
Mm-hmm.
And we always have more than eight that want to do it. So pounding on the door might be a little bit... pounding on the door might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but we do have a number of adults that are willing to talk about their loss.
It's something I don't think anybody who hasn't experienced can really have that feeling. I know when a young person myself, we had friends that lost their mom or the dad, and while you can sympathize with it, you really can't empathize with it. It's a feeling that it's very desolate, I would imagine, huh?
Well, it's very difficult for children, and the interesting thing we've learned through the camp is that it changes as the children age. So within the same family, if one young person is, say, 13 or 14 when the parent dies, and another one is 6 or 7,
mm-hmm.
the 13 or 14-year-old is worried about how the bills are going to be paid and who's going to provide for them and who's going to drive them to soccer practice, whereas a 6 or 7-year-old is more... just kind of lost for leadership and feels lonely and wonders who's going to tuck them into bed at night.
Sure.
So it's interesting how a younger, how depending on the age you are, it changes even among children who have experienced it.
Do you have a lot of siblings that participate?
We have quite a few. Our very first year, we didn't think too much about siblings and how that would play in a camp, but our very first year we had a family of five.
Wow.
Children.
Holy cats.
And it was a very sad situation. The father had murdered the mother.
Holy jeez.
Yeah, and so we had these five young people whose mother was dead and their father was in prison. And it made us wake up real quickly to learn all the different ways that people can unfortunately die.
How are those kids doing now?
I haven't heard from any of those kids in the last couple of years, but last I heard they were doing real well. They'd moved back to their grandmother's house in Iowa. And they had gone from the streets of Chicago to more of a community, a rural community. So last I heard, they were doing good.
That's good. One of the most touching things that I experience, of course, is the final day of camp when the kids go on stage and they kind of exhibit what they've learned. They're able to show off some of their skills. And I just can't sit in the auditorium without crying and getting goosebumps. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's really terrific. Each Friday, the camp is 2 weeks long. Each session is 2 weeks long. And each Friday, the kids do a show. The first Friday, they do a talent show. And that's mainly skills they may have brought to camp with them. So, some can sing and some can dance a little bit and some can maybe even draw pictures. But then the second Friday, there's the final show, and that's what they learned at camp. So so that's a combination of their music, their theater, and their dance. Put together in a very loose story, and what's really great about it, what I love about it, is that it's not intended for, the camp's not intended to make kids into singers or dancers or actors. So it's not about how good they do; it's the fact that they get up there and they do it. That's what's important, and they get up there and they sing their hearts out, and they understand that it's okay if they're not perfect at it.
And they get the self-confidence they might not have had when they started. You see some kids that are a little introverted when they start. At the end of the 2 weeks, they're a changed young person.
Yeah, we've seen that a lot. We've seen a lot of people come out of their shell during the course of camp.
The people that participate on your staff, it must affect their lives also, Brett.
I think it does. We have an education staff here of two, and then they hire about 15 others to help run the camp in the summertime. And I think it's had a big effect on all of the counselors. And that's another unintended or unanticipated, I should say, benefit that we didn't think about, is how it would impact positively the lives of those who got to work here.
Well, being affiliated, of course, with Roosevelt University, I'm sure Chuck Middleton is very supportive of everything that you do, and the entire staff and board over at Roosevelt certainly appreciates, with the Chicago College of the Performing Arts, that I'm very proud to serve on the board, and Henry Fogel, of course. Just a great group of kids that want to come out and help and maybe be the future entertainers of tomorrow. You never know.
You never know. And, I always say this camp idea, I probably had this camp idea 20 years ago, 15 years ago. But it wasn't until I came to work at Roosevelt and had people like Chuck Middleton that, you know, were my boss, and they had this culture of this organization that said, yes, let's do this. This is a crazy idea, but let's do it. I wouldn't have been able to do it anywhere else, I don't think.
Well, it's funny how the stars align. You and I have been friends for many years since you first came to Chicago from your many travels around. And the Auditorium Theater has never thrived or been as vibrant as it has been since you've been there. I mean, you have made a mark on Chicago in the theatrical community and the entertainment community that like no other. And you continue to do so with the great people that you have, the great ideas that you have. You're full of the emotional energy that's necessary to run a world-class institution like the Auditorium Theater.
Well, that's very kind of you to say, Kevin. That's very, very kind. Thank you.
Well, what's coming up for the auditorium here in the early season here?
Well, you know, this is our 125th anniversary of the auditorium.
There you go.
This is it, the big 125. So we have got a huge season planned, a huge season that includes, we've got the American Ballet Theater from New York. We have the Royal Ballet from London. We have Dance Theater of Harlem returning. We have Orbert Davis and the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic coming. We've got Susan Warner coming. We've got Ron Hawking's doing his way as a salute to Sinatra. Sinatra would have turned 100 had he...
Oh, really? Okay, okay.
It would have been his 100th birthday.
Okay.
It's going to be a huge season. And then the cornerstone will be our gala event on December 9th, 2014, which is the exact date, 125 years to the day that the theater opened. And we've got the symphony, Chicago Symphony, playing, and the lyric opera singing, and we've got Patti LuPone coming to do Broadway, and it's just going to be a terrific night.
You know, the Auditorium Theater has been a great place. The history of that, what has it been before? It's been a hotel. It's been a repository for the military. It's been so many different things.
It really has. You know, the auditorium building, built in 1889, was a hotel, an office tower, and a theater. Over the years, the theater has been almost always a theater, except for the war years when it was used by the military, and they actually put a bowling alley on our stage. And so any servicemen who may be listening who were at the auditorium building during World War II, please contact me, because we're doing video history, live living histories, with all surviving servicemen we can find. So,
and bring your bowling ball.
Yeah. But no, thank you for letting me get that plug in, because we have to get the word out. We want
sure.
all service people who may have been here in World War II. But then the offices in the hotel, you know, is what Roosevelt took over and made into the university, made some of the rooms into classrooms and some into offices. And it's really a special place.
Well, you have another area now that's kind of a black box theater you've developed in the last couple of years.
Yes, we did. When Roosevelt built their new building on Wabash Avenue, we were able to put a little black box theater into that space, and it seats about 120, and it's been terrific. We've been able to do some things that we wouldn't be able to do on the stage of the auditorium.
Well, the auditorium has become the place for dance in Chicago. I think, of course, being the home of the Joffrey and our good friend Ashley Weider and the other dance companies, that's quite impressive, Brett.
Yeah, it is, and we've been very lucky that the Joffrey's been here and continues to be a terrific partner, and then all the companies we bring in, Alvin Ailey comes every year, so it is. It's been great with the dance, but you know we do so much more too. We have concerts, we have Broadway, we have there's church here every Sunday morning even.
All right, it's the Barrington Church, right?
Yeah, the Willow Creek,
right.
It's
yeah.
The downtown branch,
right.
And every Sunday, 10 a.m., they have service and get about 1,200 people here every Sunday for
That's
it.
That's wonderful. And it gets the word out about the Auditorium Theater, too.
Well, and it makes the auditorium welcoming to everyone, and that's
sure.
the point. It's everybody's home.
Sure. Launched in 2005, Hands Together Heart to Art is an innovative educational camp that utilizes various performing arts disciplines to help children recognize and cope with the multitude of emotions associated with the loss of a loved one, which helps to initiate the healing process. The program encourages communication, fosters emotional growth, and provides the consolation of friendship and compassion through group activities and classes. Hands Together Heart to Art also has a high artist-to-student ratio to ensure a fun, safe, and supportive atmosphere where children come to understand that they are not alone in their situation. During the two-week period, trained professional artists will help campers build skills in acting, improvisation, singing, music, dance, juggling, mime, writing, and stage direction. During one of the camp's most powerful sessions, in an exercise in which they compose a letter to their lost parent. The camp culminates with the creation, rehearsals, and staging of an original performance piece, which is presented for family and friends at the conclusion of the camp. And on the line with us right now is the executive director of the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, our good pal Brett Batterson. The camp runs July 7th through the 18th, July 21st through August 1st. Always a pleasure, my pal. And I'm very sincere when I say it's an honor to be able to get the word out about Hands Together, Heart to Art.
Well, it means a lot that you've been so supportive, so I thank you, Kevin.
Anything we can do, you know we will, and I will look forward to seeing you on Tuesday for a little lunch.
That sounds great.
Take care, my pal.
Thank you.
Brett Batterson, the executive director of the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, and certainly one of the great traditions that, as I said before, I'm honored to participate in, and that's Hands Together, Heart to Art, the summer day camp. A unique program that brings joy and hope to children who have lost one or both parents and utilizes the therapeutic power of the arts to encourage emotional healing. For information, 312-922-2110. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, Felix Cavallari, from Felix Cavallari's Rascals, the 2014 tour. Great entertainer, certainly great songs, grooving, good loving, how can I be sure? It was delightful chatting with him and making his acquaintance. And, of course, our good pal, Brett Batterson, the executive director of the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, now presenting, and can you believe it, the 10th annual Hands Together Heart to Art Summer Camp at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University, July 7th through the 18th and July 21st through August 1st. For information, 312-922-2110. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart each time you hear her name. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music